This is Greg Harumbas of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Certainly a busy political week. You and I talked about a week ago, right when the president had issued his new Middle East policy. For the most part, he talked about spreading democracy throughout the Middle East, very reminiscent of what President Bush was saying in part of his second term. But he ruffled the most feathers by saying any sort of Middle East peace talk should begin with Israel conceding to pre-1967 borders in his meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu at the White House late last week, and then certainly in Netanyahu's speech at the joint session of Congress on Tuesday. The Israeli leader made it very clear he has no intention of honoring the president's request on that. He got a rousing reception from Congress, so after all the talk, where do things stand?
Well, I think they stand at the point where the administration is just going to have to rethink the position they have taken. Look, this illustrates a fundamental difference between the major parties, and if not that, the last two presidents on dealing with Israel. Policy in the Bush administration would begin with having a good relationship with the person in charge in Israel. Under President Bush, of course, it was Ariel Sharon, and now it's Benjamin Netanyahu, also of the Likud party. My guess would be the current president does not have that kind of relationship, and he does not begin his roadmap of the Middle East starting with Israel, but with the Palestinian directorate. That said, Prime Minister Netanyahu made it very clear he has long ago made his peace with the Palestinian homeland, but he could not live next to a country that does not recognize Israel's right to exist. In addition, we've seen the makeup between the Fatah faction in the Palestinian directorate and the more militant Hamas. The question is, how long is that going to last, particularly the last time they had a breakup, and Hamas essentially broke up and took with it the Gaza Strip right on the Israeli border. My feeling is that it's Israel we have to stand with right away, and Congress was saying that precisely. In effect saying, yes, sir, that's my BB.
John, let's talk about the president's trip a little bit. To some extent, I think, overshadowed by the Netanyahu speech on Tuesday, with the president getting a rousing reception in Ireland. For the most part, things seem to go well in Great Britain, although a couple of snafus on the toast and the Westminster Abbey guest book. But as far as the overall trip, what's the goal and how's it going so far?
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt for the president to be photographed with the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, or the world's most famous newlyweds just back from their honeymoon, William and Princess Catherine. Or I should say Duchess Catherine. I've been corrected on that one a few times. In addition, very much like John Kennedy, when he went to the land of his ancestors in 1963, the president charmed people in the old sod. Now he's getting down to the brass tacks. He's in Paris for a meeting of the Economic Summit and welcomed yesterday by President Sarkozy along with President Medvedev of Russia. Now it's less photo opportunities and more hard work, particularly at a time when France is going through its own political turmoil right now. We'll see how long the aura from London and from Dublin lasts for this president.
John, let's move on to domestic politics now. And New York's 26th Congressional District was the site of a special election this week. It's a district that I believe for about the past four decades has been entirely represented by Republicans. Not anymore. That's because with the Democrat in this race, Kathy Hochul, defeated Republican Jane Corwin, and a third-party candidate, Jack Davis, who is, according to some, a longtime Democrat who was a stealth Tea Party candidate. Others thought he was a real Tea Party candidate. The Democrats say this is a massive referendum on Paul Ryan's Medicare reform plan, and it shows that the GOP is doomed if they stick with this plan. The GOP says, well, that perhaps the Democrats succeeded in scaring us a little bit. That's what Paul Ryan said. And they say that the stealth Tea Party candidate siphoned away votes from the Republican Jane Corwin. Who's right?
I have been talking about this for 2 days. I should have it down to a soundbite. It is inarguable that the Metascare tactics about the Ryan plan fueled Kathy Hochul's political coffers and were key to her victory. Were they the only ingredient involved, and was it a referendum on the Ryan plan? Hardly. One, she was a county clerk. And in a position like that, a person can become very popular working out snafus with driver's licenses. Two, you had the presence of the Trojan horse candidate, Jack Davis, who has run for Congress as a Democrat before and ran a strong anti-free trade message that resonated in parts of Western New York where the economy is moribund. Three, and I have to say it, Jane Corwin is a very bright lady and a respected legislator. She ran a very, very bad campaign in the sense that they made errors in dealing with the third-party candidate, and she did not attack her opponent's pro-abortion and pro-gay marriage stand at all, leaving these issues off the table. I'd have to say that whoever got her to spend $1.6 million is probably very thankful that there isn't malpractice involved in political consulting, because he or she would be headed for jail right now.
Should Hochul be considered the favorite or the underdog come next November?
Well, again, seats have been won for the three times in New York in special elections in the upstate area that on paper should be Republican but went to the Democrats. New York 20 in 2009 flipped to the Republicans the following year. New York 23 was barely held on by the Democrat after going Democratic in 2009. I would have to say that this seat will see a strong Republican candidate run and in all likelihood go mano a mano with Democrat Hochul. But remember, as I often quote former Secretary of State James Baker, overnight is an eternity in politics.
Certainly true, John. Overnight, and actually a couple of weeks, can be an eternity in politics. It was just a couple of weeks ago on the show, we were talking about Mike Pence's decision to run for Indiana governor, and I asked you if the current Indiana governor would be likely to join the presidential race, and you said yes. We heard it here first. Ultimately, of course, Mitch Daniels saying no. What changed?
All right. What changed was, and I take Governor Daniels at his word, everyone was ready to go. As of Friday, I learned that people on the Inn expected an announcement of candidacy. But in the end, his wife and four children just did not want him to do it, and he bowed to his family. So when someone says personal reasons or family reasons, I usually take them at face value. And in the case of Governor Daniels, I especially take him at face value.
John, we'll have to leave it there. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend as the nation pauses to honor those who have sacrificed for our country, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to seeing you and talking to you again. And on a beautiful day like this, I hope we have more of them. I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.